Wherever you stream podcasts, iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, iHeartRadio, just some examples. And once you get hooked on the show, we ask you to please subscribe to our podcast and give us a rating. We appreciate a good rating. 5 stars would be nice. We try to bring good guests to the show, and one of them is on line number one right now. Enjoyed talking to him when we did the segment with In These Times magazine. He's still writing for In These Times, writes for American Prospect, New York Daily News, New York Times. His name is Sean Richman. Sean spent quite a amount of time as a union organizer and representative. You were with the, weren't you an organizer with the teachers at one time, Sean? Welcome to the show, by the way.
Thanks for having me back. Yeah, for about 10 years I was with the AFT. For about half that time I was running the union's charter school organizing division, where we were spending $4 million a year to organize 1,000 workers.
That's a lot of jack.
Which got me thinking that the system is maybe broken.
Yeah, a little bit, right. This is your first book, though. Tell the Bosses We're Coming, A New Action Plan for Workers in the 21st Century. Is that right?
That's right. I mean, it's a book that I couldn't have written if I was still on active duty. And, you know, it's my writing it in these times in a lot of ways was the first draft of this. You know, I left the union in the fall of 2015 to start a family, and I just started writing, you know, playing with some ideas of, you know, what's wrong and what we could fix about it. And so the result is this book, which, you know, we wanted to get out during the election year. We were hoping to get it out. We're hoping that it would get it out when the primaries would still be hot and heavy. It's sort of a funny book because it's got, you know, it's like a Frankenstein's monster of a book in terms of the audience that we're aiming at. Because, you know, I really want to get into, you know, shoot my way into some conversations on Capitol Hill. But it's also a really useful book for activists because it's got some ideas here and like strategic items that are actually within our control that don't require any sort of legislative reform, that are just things that we just haven't chosen to do for whatever reason.
And the legislative reform, we've tried. We had the, what was it called, EFCA, the Employee Free Choice Act, under the Obama administration. Yeah, that was effed up, right?
And right now the current sort of standard bearer legislation is this thing called the PRO Act, which would, amazingly, it would essentially repeal Taft-Hartley. Get rid of right to work laws. It would allow unions to engage in more solidarity activism by taking the dispute to not your direct employer, but a company that does substantial business with them, which is actually the bigger damage that Taft-Hartley did, I think, is it outlawed solidarity. But it's not enough. It would not bring unions back in any substantial way. That the real problem here is we have a labor representation system that is based upon an individual workplace by individual workplace model that the employers have largely seceded from. They spent 50 years offshoring, subcontracting, and gigifying employees so that they don't have to have responsibility for their company and their workers. And that's really the bigger problem with labor law, and the PRO Act won't fix that. I've been saying this, you know, saying it throughout the primaries, you know, for In These Times, every time one of the candidates would come up with their labor platform, I'd review it. And, you know, it's in some ways it's kind of amazing to think that we're in a position that, you know, repealing Taft-Hartley was the gold standard of what the AFL-CIO, you know, of its legislative agenda for decades and decades and decades. And now we're in a position where that is the official Democratic position, that they're going to repeal Taft-Hartley. And it ain't good enough. You got to do better than that.
Mm-hmm. And right to work grew out of Taft-Hartley, did it not?
Yes. Taft-Hartley created a carve-out under federal law that said, well, states can pass a law that. And actually, it's actually sort of debatable what Congress meant when it passed that and what right to work actually meant. And if we had a decent judiciary in this country, we could have a really interesting debate about whether it was meant to ban fees for labor representation or whether it was meant to ban simply forced union membership. And there's some scholarships that says that actually probably in 1947 Congress just meant to say you can't be forced to join a union, you know, to have your job. But it was silent on, you know, whether you have to pay fees because there's still a union doing all this work for you.
So you're talking about legislation here. Now, legislation, obviously, it would be good to have pro-worker legislation. And it's just been so difficult, as you pointed out. You are of the opinion that workers need to kind of do this on their own. And I think we're starting to see that, especially with the pandemic. You're seeing the strikes at Amazon. Well, they're not actually union strikes, but they're workers that are being very vocal. The food and commercial workers. I was just talking about the farm workers and poultry and the meat processing plants, where it's just ridiculous the conditions that are in those plants right now. Do you feel that, I guess for lack of a better term, the times are a-changing right now? And we're seeing polling indicating that unions are a good thing in America. What's your thoughts on that, Sean?
Yeah, I mean, we got to bring the strike back. And, you know, I've got a very long chapter in the book about strikes, you know, that strikes are contagious. But it's very hard to get workers to strike on the levels that we need to if most workers have never participated in a strike. They've never seen a coworker go on strike or a friend or a neighbor and win. That's the crucial thing, and win. And so, you know, when I was writing this book, you know, 2019 was a pretty incredible year for strike activity in the 21st century in America. It was a very notable uptick in strike activity. But also, I was trying to splash some cold water on that to say, like, well, you know, all we did is we got to 1986 levels of strikes. And 1986 was a really lousy year for strikes. Because the contagion runs the opposite direction, too. You know, we tend to talk about Reagan and the air traffic controllers. That was symbolic. What really happened is a copper mining company in Arizona called Phelps Dodge hard bargained their employees to impasse over draconian cuts in benefits and hours and wages, forced them out on strike, bust in thousands of scabs, and kept the mine open for a 12-month period so that at the end of that, the scabs could decertify the union. And that became the blueprint for how you bust a union in Reagan and Bush's and Clinton's America. And so in that sort of circumstance, workers saw strikes as something you lose. And bosses worked that into their captive audience meetings when workers were trying to organize unions. You know, you're not going to get anything unless you go on strike. And if you go on strike, we could permanently replace you. And it was devastating. So you get to the year 2019, the year 2020 in particular, if you're in an Amazon fulfillment center, your back is really against the wall. If you're at a McDonald's, your back is against the wall. You know, your life is literally at stake. So what do you have to lose? You have your life to lose. You go on strike. And I do think that we are potentially in a historic strike wave at the moment. It's hard to tell because all the journalists are getting laid off, and there's no government agency that's gonna, you know, that's capturing the numbers. But workers are learning something from this experience. But in my book, you know, I mean, for labor activists, you know, for that audience, you know, I'm saying that there are things that are within our control. But it's, you know, it's complicated, you know. I mean, it's amazing that we have a left for the first time in forever. You know, there's tens of thousands of people who consider themselves socialists who are working on plans and developing a labor activism model. I contend with that a little bit, too, because the so-called rank-and-file strategy, there's a lot within it, and it's very flexible. My understanding of it is that really it's an admonition of if you are, you know, if you're a footloose 25-year-old kid and you want to get involved in labor, don't just get a career as a union staffer. Now, that's good advice. But what it seems to be in practice is, you know, there's sort of this knee-jerk impulse to sort of oppositionalism. You know, well, let's go and go get a job at a unionized workplace and do a caucus and, you know, run an opposition slate. As if our problem is, you know, that we don't have the right leaders. It's not that we don't have the right leaders. It's that the system is a trap. And that if you became president of your union, you'd be stuck with the same lousy rules and lousy laws as everybody else. And what's more interesting is whether we intentionally don't form unions, right? Like, the power of what the Amazon workers are doing right now is they're organizing, they're striking, but they are very consciously not forming a union, because a legal union in this country is a pair of handcuffs, particularly when it comes to engaging in solidarity activism. An example of the stakes here. I'm certainly recall when Nabisco shut down their Oreo factory in the city of Chicago and shipped those jobs overseas.
Right.
Two, three years ago. Now, the appropriate response, right, would be that every grocery store worker, certainly every union member grocery store worker in this country would, you know, when a truck of Nabisco shows up to the supermarket, say, well, we're not gonna put that on the shelves. I'm not gonna ring that up. We're not touching that product. That would be the power of solidarity. It's completely illegal. And by illegal, I mean, it's not just like a slap on the wrist illegal, like when the boss breaks the law. The boss would be able to go directly to court, get an injunction, and slap triple financial damages on the union for whatever they claim, and they can make up a number for what they're losing. And they, of course, they'd make up something around the $1 billion mark, and no union has $3 billion in the bank. The unions would be put out of business. The officers would be held personally liable. You know, you'd lose your home. It's not just like a law that we're too, you know, chicken to break. It's that it's a law with real teeth that would destroy lives.
Yeah.
And so don't be a union in that case. You know, the workers who are organizing at Google also are very consciously not forming a legal union. They're organizing. They're engaging in walkouts. They're doing some incredible stuff. I mean, if you think about Google, you got workers across the world. So they've got a patchwork of laws, and they're talking online. They've got all kinds of systems for keeping in touch with each other, and they're figuring out, you know, they're getting back to the basics. What can we do today to get our point across to the boss? And so those are some of the changes that we have the power to make, and that we need to consider more as a labor movement.
Sean, I got to take a quick break. Can you stay with us for another segment here on America's Workforce?
Sure.
Okay, real good. Sean Richmond is his name. SeanRichmond.com is his website, and he's out with a book, Tell the Bosses We're Coming, A New Action Plan for Workers in the 21st Century. Perfect guest for this show. Dave Leopold will be joining us. He is a top-notch, nationally known immigration attorney. He's going to talk about DACA and what's ahead for immigration in the United States, all part of America's Workforce. Back in a few.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
For over 20 years, organized labor has turned to the BMA Media Group for communications and events needs, because BMA knows how to positively impact labor's issues and spread the union message. The BMA Media Group is a union marketing, public relations, production, and events firm. So BMA Media knows what it takes to help unions capture market share, conduct marketing campaigns, partake in political education, promote labor management, organize membership development, and support issues such as prevailing wage, project labor agreements, responsible contracting, and workforce training. They also plan and produce special events such as conventions, conferences, and anniversary celebrations. The BMA Media Group, marketing union value for you. To learn how the BMA Media Group can assist your labor organization, just visit bmamedia.com. That's www.bmamedia.com for all the labor tools you need to move your union into the future.
Part union newsletter, part industry trade magazine. The Labor Citizen provides the most comprehensive coverage of the issues that matter to the hard-working members of Ohio's labor trades. Building trades unions that subscribe to the Labor Citizen guarantee their members receive a monthly report crafted by their own union leaders, along with interesting feature stories and news relevant to Ohio's union construction industry. The full-color tabloid is already being delivered to active and retired members from nearly 50 different building trade unions. You won't find more comprehensive coverage of the news and issues important to Ohio's labor trades anywhere. And the only way you can have this valuable monthly publication delivered to your mailbox is if your local union decides to join. If your building trades union is not receiving the Labor Citizen, ask why at your next regular meeting. or send an email to info@laborcitizen.com for more information. That email address again is info@laborcitizen.com.
America's Workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
Once again, welcome back to America's Workforce, recorded in Cleveland, Ohio, for workers all across America. We're still online at awfradio.com, and you can listen to the show wherever you stream podcasts, iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, iHeartRadio, just some examples. Let's go back to our live line, rejoin Sean Richmond. SeanRichmond.com is a website, and he's out with his first book, Tell the Bosses We're Coming, A New Action Plan for Workers in the 21st Century. I remember the last time I talked to you, you came out with a Workers' Bill of Rights. I understand you have a little snippet of this in your book. And I'll tell you, that's so darn important because workers are confused today. They're angry. We're working in the middle of a pandemic. We hear of essential workers, those in the food processing plants, atrocious conditions, not getting the equipment they need to keep safe on the job. If you could run down your Bill of Rights for us real quick. Go ahead, Sean.
Well, I mean, it's really about where labor law is rooted in the Constitution. And do you know where the National Labor Relations Act draws its constitutionality? Do you know?
Where? No, I don't.
The Commerce Clause. Of course.
The Commerce Clause.
That's where human rights belong, is where your impact on interstate commerce is. And by the way, because of that, civil rights law is similarly based on the Commerce Clause, which is completely ridiculous.
Yeah.
And so what happens is, you know, the law was declared constitutional. I mean, it was a strategy to get it past a very conservative Supreme Court that didn't want Congress monkeying around with private business. And the law becomes constitutional largely because of the sit-down strikes that happened in the interim. The next day, the bosses are in the courts, arguing that the law violates their First Amendment rights. And the First Amendment it will always trump the Commerce Clause. So as an example, the law was really meant to be a neutrality law. It was meant to say that workers decide they have a union, they have a union. The boss doesn't get to say anything about it. And bosses said, well, come on, we have a First Amendment right to at least express our opinion. And of course the court said, yes, that's right, you do. Now, you step back to today, and what that means is, an NLRB certification election, which determines whether extra statutory protections are going to be applied to a group of workers at a workplace to try to form a union, it's an election that's run by an arm of the federal government, and the rules of which are that one party and one party only can force all of the voters into a mandatory presentation of their position. And within that presentation, they can threaten your job. They can lie. They can hire somebody to impersonate a federal agent and lie about what your rights are. And there's no right to respond. There's no equal time provision. And crucially, not only is the party that can do this only an employer, it's only an employer that advocates a no vote. If the employer was saying, hey, a union's not a bad thing, that would also be illegal. When you step back from that, how is that not a massive violation of the First Amendment? How is that not politically coerced speech? And so what I was arguing in Labor's Bill of Rights is we should think about raising more of these kinds of arguments, because the full weight of the labor law system has become blatantly constitutional, but we don't make those arguments. And partly we don't make those arguments because there's a thing that's happening, I think, in Washington, where at the international unions, the lawyers get to have the last word on strategy. And the lawyers are important. They should definitely be in the room, but I don't think they should be the default last word. Because, you know, they're pursuing a very cautious strategy, which makes sense. Look, we lose in the court all the time. The courts are not our friends. Even
right.
Democratic judges tend to be fairly patrician and don't understand unions. But, you know, that's a strategy for losing more slowly. That's not a strategy for sort of attempts to break through and really just sort of lay bare how broken this system is. So I do think that we need to do a lot more thinking along those lines. I've also got a chapter in the book that you know, I mean, the book is mostly about we have to get outside of the NLRB frame, that we need more sort of all-in systems of labor representation. We need just cause, right to your job laws. We need works councils. We need, you know, industrial labor standards that get set across an entire sector. But we also do need to amend the National Labor Relations Act, and we got to do more than just repeal Taft-Hartley. And one of the things that we have to do in the act is, and in all of our legislative drafting, if we actually get a president and a Senate and a Congress who give a damn about workers, we gotta have instructions in there for judges to back off. And one of the things that we need to do when we amend the National Labor Relations Act is we need to explicitly – we can legislatively overturn every bad Supreme Court decision on the NLRB, because every Supreme Court decision is them trying to interpret Congress's legislative intent. Well, Put your legislative intent in there that says you're wrong. We think you tend to get it wrong. We're wiping the slate clean of the Yeshiva decision, of the McKay decision, you know, of all these just terrible decisions. And, you know, we're telling you back off. This is not your lane. You don't understand this stuff. That's really important. The preamble to the National Labor Relations Act isn't really important. And I think we need to, you know, we need to root this act in the parts of the Constitution that actually deal with our human rights. We need to root it in the First Amendment right to free speech and free assembly. We need to root it in the Fifth Amendment right to due process. And we need to root it in the 13th Amendment right to be free of slavery and involuntary servitude.
Definitely some food for thought, Sean. I have one more question here, and this is kind of to wrap up the interview. By the way, we're talking with Sean Richman, author of the book Tell the Bosses We're Coming, A New Action Plan for Workers in the 21st Century. I wonder if you could address those in the non-union plant right now. And I know we're talking about collective action. You can't do this alone. You can't do this alone. We all know that. But I'm just wondering, how do you address that group that's listening right now that's not happy about their working conditions? They're not getting their personal protective equipment. They're not getting the pay that they deserve. How do you speak to them right now, Sean?
I think it depends on whether you work in an industry where there's a union that is seriously trying to organize you. So if you are, like if you're in a meatpacking plant that's non-union, the UFCW wants to work with you and you should call them up. If you're not, then, you know, you need to find your fellow workers that are also trying to make change. Try Googling it. I mean, they're out there. It's kind of amazing to the extent to which people are talking about their workplaces on Reddit and on other kinds of internet forums. Find each other. Make a plan. Find a left-wing organization that will give you some advice. You know, find Democratic Socialists of America. Find the Industrial Workers of the World. Find the Center for Popular Democracy. And make a plan. And, you know, I mean, I'm waiting for the reviews to roll in for this book and for people to realize that. I mean, I actually spend a little bit of time in the book, you know, talking about sabotage, which I think is a tried and true labor strategy that, you know, is totally not legal and therefore got dropped from labor's arsenal for a while there. But if you're in a non-union factory and you need to get your point across to the boss, think about sabotage.
Well, you got to have a little rebel in you. You just got to watch your limits. Watch your limits on that, you know?
Yeah, that threatens anybody's life. I mean, by sabotage.
Right, right.
I mean, you know, in classic sabotage, you know, it's more about getting the point across that you know how this place runs better than the boss does. And how you removing your, you know, your sort of active cooperation causes problems.
One more question here. What do you think of the future? How do you feel moving forward here? We're in the middle of this pandemic. You know what's going on in America. We've got an election in just a couple of months, a general election for the next president. Biden's leading in the polls right now. Things could change. What's your feeling right now, Sean?
You know, I think we on the left, we give ourselves some very disempowering narratives, you know, that we're only going to get the legislative change if we can get the general strike going. Therefore, we should only focus on getting the general strike going and we can think about legislative change later. Which that just means that somebody else makes the laws. You know, and we also, you know, here's the analogy. If this is our equivalent of 1932, in 1932, I would not have voted for Roosevelt. I would not have felt great about him at all, and I wouldn't have liked much of his first term, which was a much more pro-corporate agenda than it was pro-worker. But because there was a crisis in the country, and I think there's a crisis in the country now, there's definitely a crisis in the country then, he had to deal the unions into his framework. And his first framework was the National Recovery Administration, which was, you know, again, corporate collusion, but it would set these labor codes. And crucially, it included this thing called Section 7A, right to organize. Wasn't worth the paper it was written on, because there was no enforcement mechanism, and the bosses were still shooting workers. But it was just enough to raise workers' hopes and then dash their expectations that it actually sparked a real strike wave in the year 1934. So we're not going to get enough from President Biden, but it might be enough to get some real action going.
All right, we'll leave it on that note. Great stuff, all contained in the book, Tell the Bosses We're Coming, A New Action Plan for Workers in the 21st Century. And you can find more at SeanRichmond.com. Sean, you take care. Keep up the fight, my brother.